There's been a lot of talk in recent months about exporting democracy or Canadian values or our way of life to benighted lands like Afghanistan. Occasionally, the export-import metaphor breaks down, and we hear loose talk about imposing democracy, whatever that means, or at the other extreme, someone speaks delicately about bringing democracy, or our values, or our way of life, to Afghanistan. Today, we look at the sometimes unfortunate, or allegedly unfortunate, role of Canada's mining industry as it helps us export our values to some of the places where we do that, whether we like it or not. In October 2005, the House of Commons Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs and International Development recommended concrete regulatory measures to end human rights and environmental abuses committed by Canadian mining companies abroad. The Halifax Initiative, a Canadian coalition of labor, environmental, and human rights groups, claims that Canadian extractive companies, which include mining, oil, and gas, have been implicated in human rights abuses and environmental disasters in more than 30 countries, including Colombia, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Last year's parliamentary committee considered the specific case of the Canadian mining company TVI Pacific in the Philippines and expressed a serious concern about the environmental, social, and political impact of their Canatuan silver and gold project, about the impact of the project on indigenous rights and the human rights of the people living in the area, about TVI Pacific's use of military-trained and controlled security forces, which has allegedly led to a militarization of the region, and related human rights abuses, and about the support TVI has received from the Canadian government. The committee also heard from representatives of the company and of the Siyakan Subano Association, a body that represents some of the indigenous Subanan people in the area who testified to the benefits of TVI Pacific's activities at the Canatuan Mountain. The benefits include the signing of a memorandum of agreement with some members of the community under which TVI pays a royalty to the community and provides health care, education, and training for sustainable agriculture and livestock rearing. Benefits also include the cleanup of illegal mining waste and tailings, some 300 full-time jobs, and contributions to the national, regional, and local tax base. Clearly, the issue is not a simple one, nor is it limited to this one operation in the Philippines. TVI itself is planning a $23 million expansion of the Canatuan project and is working to acquire and rehabilitate another project, the 26,000-hectare North Davao copper and gold mining property in the Compostela Valley. Despite questions raised by the parliamentary committee, TVI Pacific moves ahead undeterred. The internationally renowned Pascua Lama proposal on the Chile-Argentina border, high in the Andes, is set to become another contentious mine with a Canadian operator, this time the gold giant Barrick. According to Barrick, Pascua Lama is being designed as an open-pit operation centered at an elevation of 4,600 meters. The project will produce both oxide and sulfide ores. Based on existing reserves of 17.6 million ounces, the minimum mine life is expected to be 21 years. The European NGO Corporation Watch claims that silver, copper, and mercury will also be taken from the mine. The Pascua Lama site extends to both sides of the Argentine-Chilean border, with 80% in the latter, and lies under the glaciers known as Toro 1, Toro 2, and Esperanza. They feed into the Huasco Valley, 660 kilometers north of Santiago, supplying irrigation water for some 70,000 small farmers. Sara Lorraine, director of the Sustainable Chile Program, told Terra America that Barrick Gold's avarice and obstinacy prompt the transnational to improvise technical proposals for the environmental authorities, citing the supposedly successful removal of a glacier for one of its mines in Central Asia. Quote, "No glaciologist, no scientific institute, no known study supports the risky experiment that the Barrick firm conducted in the Republic of Kyrgyzstan," end quote. Sarah Lorraine. In Guatemala, Mayan groups and their supporters continue to demand closure of the Marlin mine. Of the governments of Canada and the United States, they call for, quote, "an immediate radical change in the policies of promoting, facilitating, and financing Canadian and U.S. mining companies that contribute to grave human rights violations." But official Canadian values are silent on this question. Canada's parliamentary committee notes that, quote, "mining activities in some developing countries have had adverse effects on local communities, especially where regulations governing the mining sector and its impact on the economic and social well-being of employees and local residents, as well as the environment, are weak or non-existent, or where they are not enforced," end quote. It does not note that mining activities may also be problematic in jurisdictions where governments have come to view themselves as promoters rather than as regulators of mining activity. The committee seems to have missed this point. In the words of a declaration by Mayan organizations in the region last March, quote, "Historically, as indigenous peoples, we have been subjected to the pillage of our natural patrimony and our very territories, practices that began with the Spanish invasion, the creation of racist, classist, and exclusive Guatemalan state, and now continue with the neocolonialism of the so-called developed North," end quote. Neoliberal principles that generally underlie much of the aid given by the international financial institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund often require legislation that opens the door to foreign investment and reduces business costs associated with regulation. The Philippines are a good example. Last year, after a Supreme Court decision on the constitutionality of the Mining Act, the Philippines hosted an international conference on mining dubbed Open for Business, Mining and Minerals as New Drivers of Growth. According to the Alternative Forum for Research in Mindanao, the Mining Act provides incentive to attract mining investors to the country. For example, it allows 100% foreign ownership of mining firms, which is up from 40%. It guarantees the direct flow of capital, profits, equipment, and loan services out of the country, reduces the royalty on gold to 2%, assures non-expropriation, and reduces excise tax from 5% to 2%. It also provides for tax holidays. TVI got a 4-year tax holiday, and assures that mining companies will receive priority access to water in their areas. Jeff Nettleton, coordinator of Philippines Indigenous Peoples Links, a London-based environmental advocacy group, urged international funding agencies to look carefully into the policies of government for indigenous people who are the most affected in mining activities. Speaking at the Forum on the International Mining Industry in the Philippines, held Monday, September 4th, at the Gran Manseng Hotel, Nettleton said that the Philippines should stop promoting mining to international investors because it is not yet capable of effectively regulating the mining industry. If the national government could not do its work and protect Filipinos from abuses of mining operations, who will? He asked. That brings us back to Canada's parliamentary committee. Although the Martin government rejected the committee's recommendations, it did, in good Canadian fashion, commit to a series of multi-stakeholder roundtables to run from June to November 2006. The first took place in Vancouver this June, and the second in Toronto just last week. The next, scheduled for October 10th to 12th in Calgary, will focus on instruments and incentives. You might want to participate. The last roundtable is to be confirmed for November 14th to 16th in Montreal. The topic for that final meeting will be host country governance and assistance to companies. The text for this broadcast is available on the World Report website and contains links that aim to enable your participation in the National Roundtable. You don't have to attend in person. You can send your written submission to the Department of Foreign Affairs or submit your comments online. You can talk or write to your MP. Remember, when Parliament is in session, letters to your federal representative do not require postage. If documentaries are your thing, you can download The Curse of Copper or purchase a copy of Sipa Kappa is Not for Sale. Again, links are available in the text for this broadcast at cjly.net/worldreport. As always, you can spread the word by writing a letter to the editor. If you're feeling especially energetic, you can organize a discussion group. Remember, governments are fond of portraying themselves as the champions of rights and freedom, won by the military in foreign wars. But real rights and real freedoms usually come directly from the efforts of humble citizens and everyday people standing up against daily wrongs and refusing to be used as a pretext for injustice against others. Solidarity is a real force for democracy. For text and MP3 versions of this broadcast, check the website at cjly.net/worldreport. To comment or suggest a story, send email to earthling@cjly.net or surface mail to Box 767, Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, V1L5R4, attention World Report. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.